Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left. Now, normally, Wendy's here. Today is abnormal. Wendy's not here. Jim Toronto is filling in ably for Wendy. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I abducted her. She is in a...
you don't have to give a location.
Undisclosed location.
You don't have to give the location.
And but so far, all of her appendages are still on.
What about ransom? Have you decided on a ransom?
Well, how do you put a price tag on a Wendy Snyder?
Can't.
That's my point.
Impossible.
That's why, unfortunately...
Staples.
Staples, right.
I haven't been able... Right. That's why she's been missing now for 17 hours, because the to your point, the key in the abduction is the ransom.
It always is, yeah.
And if you don't have the ransom, then you really, you know, I haven't been able to contact anybody.
Right.
Because what am I going to say? That's going to be the first question.
Yeah.
Well, how much do you want?
How much money? And I'm guessing it's going to be money.
And then
right?
I stammer. But it might be airtime.
Oh, that's right. That would be more besetting.
Seven shows.
How much airtime do you want?
Seven shows. And no
Steve,
Bertrand.
It seems fair.
And no Bertrand.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, what? He gave me a shot.
Don't say that.
He gave me a shot last week.
What?
Is that possible?
What
happened?
Well, you were promoting the fact that I was a guest on your after party show on the stream.
The stream of consciousness,
and
the bonus
out
hour.
Of nowhere, Steve said, well, you're trying to draw listeners and you're promoting Elton
John. Oh,
Jim.
That.
I but, heard that, Stephen.
Well, it's all inflection because the words could mean anything.
Right.
Right?
Right.
How did you do? Were your numbers up that day, Bill?
Oh, my goodness.
They were way up. Yeah.
The internet broke. Didn't you hear the story?
Yeah. We had to add a second server. I don't know what that means, but there was an extra server.
We broke the internet.
Yep, we sure did.
Well, I kicked the plug out.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens. All right. There's much to discuss. Wendy, by the way, will be back on Tuesday. We're all taking Monday off. You know, it's a national holiday, but she'll be back on Tuesday.
I'm taking off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
The beauty of being out of work is you get
what
a lot of
that?
Days off.
Well, what I've done is I consider it a way to combine volunteer work with business, because I podcast and I look for a job, which means I don't get paid for either.
Oh.
So isn't that volunteer work?
I think it counts as volunteer work. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You've not used the term sabbatical? Because when I'm out of work, I always say sabbatical because it sounds like I'm out of work.
That was about 6 months ago.
Oh.
I think there's a time ending on sabbatical that expires.
You get a year.
Yeah, you get a year. It's
and
been
then
long
you have to
enough.
Get back to work.
I have to say, I have to laugh. How long have you been doing radio?
Oh, 20 years, 20 plus years.
How long have you ran the board, as they say, would you hit the buttons for the microphones and the commercials?
Six or seven.
You just, before we went on, you looked at the board with all its lights and all its buttons, and you hit one, and you did it with such trepidation as if, is this the right one? How long have you been doing this?
I would make the worst air traffic controller in history because...
I think you should go on Niner. But I'm not sure if you should land there.
You know, I'm a toy aficionado. I love toys, and to me, it's like I have a light bright in front of me, and I don't want to. I don't want to put the wrong color peg in any hole.
It's a beautiful clown you're making there, though, with the lights.
Thank you. It's more important for me to make a pretty picture with the colored lights than for the show to sound good.
Yeah, you're like, no, that doesn't make the grin at the side if I hit that button.
Right.
Let me hit this one. Even though you get the usual, and now with the business report, here's Orion.
Right.
And then silence.
There's a little bit of silence sometimes, right?
That's I used to love that myself.
It's always, I want every show to be an adventure, Jim.
Well, it was just so funny because, you know, usually you hit the button and here we go. And here's Bill with like this.
I'm a little tentative.
The shaking finger.
Right.
And like, it looks like the right one I hit yesterday, but maybe it isn't.
Well, they explained to me that if I were to hit the wrong button, Displanes would be wiped out. And I don't want to do that to Displanes. I like Displanes.
I used to live in Displanes.
I don't want to wipe out Displanes. Here's what happened yesterday. Well, first of all, a couple things happened. We did the Walk of Fame, and it was lovely. And I want to thank everybody for either showing up or listening in. It really went well. Steve, our own Steve Bertrand, and our own Wendy
Snyder.
I heard
you, Steve. Excellent job yesterday.
They did a great job.
It was fun. Thank you.
Yeah,
it was a lot
good.
Of fun for everybody. All right, so that happened. The other thing that happened was yesterday was an anniversary. It was a milestone, and I didn't realize it until it was already done. But it was one of those milestones, and I'm sure you've experienced this, Jim, where somebody says to you, you know, it's been 10 years since this happened, or it's been 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And you stop and you go, I don't think so. And then you do the math and you go, oh, it has been. So yesterday was the 40th anniversary of the release of the original Star Wars movie into theaters. That was 40 years ago.
And they've been doing a lot of stories about that leading up to that. 40 years ago.
How can that be? I mean, I hate to sound really old, but where does the time go? Because it can't be, but it is.
Do you notice, we're about the same age, do you notice that every story you tell now was 30 years ago?
Yeah, I know.
Every story I tell, it was 30 years ago.
I know.
It dawned on me the other day. I was in my basement going through my series of bins, my storage bins, to sort of do a little spring cleaning, and I found this plaque from when I played baseball in high school at St. Pat's on the Northwest Side. And it dawned on me, I graduated high school 35 years ago.
Isn't that crazy?
Probably right now.
Yeah. Oh, it would have been this week.
It would have been
probably,
in May.
This,
yeah, 35 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm like, I looked at that young, chipper kid in that picture with all these hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
And I was like, don't grow up.
Right.
You're going to be very disappointed.
Right, right.
What position?
I was a catcher.
Were you? You actually, please take this the right way. You have the physique. Like if somebody said to me, what position did Jim play in Little League? I would have put money on a catcher
in baseball and I was a fullback in football.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got
the. You're the catcher fullback guy.
And I played goalie too. I always like to block things.
Yes.
That could have been your. That's like a 20 word eulogy for you right there.
Please, Kevin, save this tape for when Jim passes away. We can just play this tape.
You know, in life, he loved to block things.
And now in his own words, I was a catcher, I was a fullback.
Yes, yes. You're going to bring the house down. People are going to weep openly when they hear this, Jim. You know that. All right. I know this story starts out sad, but believe me, it has a much happier ending.
Oh, that's it.
A guy that I played Little League with, Jim Janak, I saw on Facebook the other day.
Jim Janak?
I don't like to brag, but I played Little League with Jim Janak.
Remember that one game he hit three homers?
Milestone game.
Yeah.
Jim's mom passed away about a week ago, and he and his brother Eddie were on the Padres with me. And I sent him a note just saying, I'm so sorry to hear about your mom. Whenever I think about her, she's just out in the bleachers watching our games, no matter how cold or hot it was. She was always there smiling and enjoying herself. And I feel so sad for your loss. So he sends me a picture of our team, the Padres. Now, I was in fourth grade at the time. So what would I have been, 8 years old?
Eight, nine.
So along with me and Jim and his brother Ed are the rest of the Padres team. Everybody
Where
on the team,
play?
12 players. I played second base there.
Where? What park?
Oh, it was at St. Damien.
Okay. Oh,
right.
Okay.
We had three fields back there.
Nice.
So, right. So I was able to name each of the 12 guys on the team. I knew their names and what positions they played.
And their mother's names, which is impressive.
Most of their mom's names. Not all their mom's names, but most of their mom's names.
Hello, Mrs. Janney.
But as I was filling it out, because I said to him, I go, oh, the Padres, we could win it all this year. This is going to be our year.
Okay,
and
Ernie.
Then I listed each of the guys' names, and I knew their positions. And then I thought, what's wrong with the human brain that I would retain that knowledge when realistically I would never need it again? You'd think I'd make space on the disc and just stop thinking about it.
Nope. That gets burned into. In fact, you know, my parents both had dementia and Alzheimer's before they passed away. And I asked the doctor because so often my dad would rattle off facts this guy that died 50 years ago, and he talked about him like he just saw him yesterday. I said, well, you know, he died like 40 years ago. And the doctor said that what happens with the brain, you know, those memories, they're in there.
Yeah.
And they're all filled in the file. The files are full.
Right.
Now, what happens with people with dementia is that they're not making new memories because they're not taking, we said, but those memories
they're there
you
for
have,
good.
When they go back to access memory, all those files are still there. There's no spring cleaning. It's just there.
Isn't that strange?
It's amazing.
It's so strange. All right, we must take a break. If you want to reach us, it's Jim sitting in for Wendy. We're at 312-981-7200, Bill F. and Jim Toronto on WGN. That voice you hear is Jim Toronto's, Elton Jim, as he's known affectionately to millions.
168.
Are you at 168? Congratulations.
168. Elton John concerts. Just went to one in March, and I was supposed to go one in May, and then Elton got sick.
How could he do that to you?
He had to cancel.
Why would he do that to you, Jim? That's very upsetting.
I had to. You know, now I've got this air flight that I have to use somewhere else.
What is the ultimate goal? I always keep track of all the concerts, and I'm astounded that you've seen them 168 times. But will there be a time, a saturation point, where you go, all right, I've rounded it off.
When he either retires or, you know, leaves us.
Don't say that.
I know.
Don't even say that.
It's just one of these things now that I just really enjoy. You know, I don't smoke. I don't drink all that much. I don't really have many vices. This is my vice.
And you go by yourself mostly.
A lot of times I go by my, because my wife is a fan, but she's certainly not like me.
How many of the 168 is your wife?
You know, the funny thing is she's probably been to more concerts than the average to see Elton John.
I'm sure.
Than the average person is either, just going along, tagging along with me.
Right.
Well, the average person hasn't seen any.
Oh, sir.
Maybe one.
Sir, just because you got this Walk of Fame thing,
don't go
throwing away around your legend thing.
I don't want to go breaking your heart.
Oh.
I've seen him a few times. But yeah, but the average person hasn't seen him at all.
So you've gone 168 more times than the average person.
Like, I tend to do things a little in excess.
Yes.
That's sort of my personality.
Yes. How many times have you seen in excess?
I actually saw them like four times, but I never went to see them by themselves.
Do you feel like you're cheating on Elton John when you go to a different show?
You know, I've seen Springsteen like 60 times, and there are some times when I say, geez, I hope Elton isn't here.
What if he sees me?
What if he sees me?
Hey, Billy Joel, no word to Elton John that I'm here.
I can never tell if you're talking about the singer or referring to yourself in the third person.
It's a subtle difference.
Right. Well, you know.
It really is.
I do have the cool orange glasses that
Elton's
I just got
having
recently.
Fun today.
All right, let's do this. We will take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then Bear Great Charles Peanut Tillman will be joining us after that.
I get to meet a Bear Great?
Have you never met him?
I've never met
such
the
a nice guy. And we've done a segment with Charles in the past, and I hope he'll okay this again today, called Ask Peanut, where people are allowed to call and ask Charles Tillman anything they want. Doesn't even have to be about football, but this has been very popular with us in the past.
Hey, this guy's a pro football player.
Oh, the best.
I think he can take a few questions.
You can't fool Charles
Tillman.
I mean,
Tillman. This guy tackled, you know, 280-pound guys, and you're worried if he can answer a question.
I'm not worried. I think he'll be able to handle this. All right, so all that's coming up in just a little bit. Stay here. It's Bill Leff and Jim Toronto in for Wendy on WGN. All right, it's Bill Leff, and Jim Toronto is sitting in for Wendy Snyder, and in the studio with us, one of my all-time favorite Bears, one of my all-time favorite NFL players, Charles Tillman, Peanut, sitting right across from me. Charles, great to see you again. Thanks for being here, sir.
Thanks for having me. I'm going to take those headphones off because only one ear is working, so
I'll
just do that like this.
We will have some headphones
it's professional
custom
radio.
Made. Right.
Yeah, I'm a professionist.
I know.
Professional ear guy over here.
We will have a Bears helmet fitted to you that has special headphones built in for you. You'll see. You'll be much happier. Charles has the Celebrity Pro Bowler Tournament coming on Thursday. That's Thursday, June 1st at Kings Bowl in Rosemont. Let's talk a little bit about that. Are you a good bowler?
I am a terrible bowler.
Are you?
No, you know, I can do triple digits.
Can you?
Break 100? I'm 100 plus.
Yeah.
That's about it, though. I think the most I've ever done is like maybe a buck 50.
That's not bad. That's not terrible.
I mean, when the highest you can score is 300, I think it is.
You're halfway
home. Like 50%. Like, no, that's a fail.
Can you pick up a good spare, like a 710?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely
right
not.
You kick it right in the middle of the goalposts, right?
I just go for one. I mean, I've seen Kingpin, the movie with Woody Harrelson. And
Randy Quaid.
Yeah, and I try to do that with my hand, and it just don't. It
no, no spin on it?
No spin, absolutely zero spin.
So you just throw it straight?
I'm straight. I line the little dots up. Walk, one, two, three, kick, and throw, and hope for the best.
You should play sometimes when they don't have the bumper guards in the gutters.
Oh, you know, I've
it's
done
even
that
more
couple,
fun that way.
I've done that a couple times, and it didn't work out so well for me.
But the true fun of bowling, Charles, is wearing rented shoes, isn't it? What's better than that?
You know, the best part about bowling is everyone gives those corny high fives.
Yes.
When you get it, I'm like, yes, It's like Gooseman and Maverick in Top Gun. When they're playing volleyball, everyone's just high-fiving. That's all they're doing.
How about that moment, too, where you put your hand over the thing that blows up just a little bit of air?
Because your hands sweat.
Oh, like crazy.
Well, I try to get my Marilyn Monroe on, and I put my shirt under it, and I just try to stand there.
7-year itch?
Like I'm cool. Look at all these people.
Yeah, people like you. Everybody's
how you guys doing outside?
Charles Tillman, everybody, right there. That's Peanut.
Yeah, Charles is not really paying attention to your questions. He's waving to everybody.
I don't think they speak English, and they just walked away. So.
Oh, well, that's going to happen. Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad.
So are you a spot bowler or a pin bowler? Do you look down at the ground at where those little arrows are, or do you look at the pins?
I'm a both bowler.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a spot and a pin bowler.
Okay.
Whatever feels natural at that frame, that's what I do.
Let's talk a little bit about your foundation, the Charles Tillman Cornerstone Foundation. When you came up with this, what exactly was the purpose? What were you thinking when you put this together, Charles?
Just to have a lot of fun and to raise a whole lot of money.
Good for you.
Naturally, I don't think a lot. What I've learned over the years are my teammates, they take bowling very seriously, and yeah. they have their own bowling balls. They have their own shoes.
Yeah.
And they have their own bag, and it's just like, it's like game day where they get in, they get the gloves, and they put it on. They get the
bowling. Bowling. Really?
It's yes. serious.
Bowling.
Wow. Yeah. I never would think. I thought it was a
clean,
dying sport.
Clean their ball. Oh, yep. yeah. Me, I'm just, hey, I'm happy to be here. Let's raise some money. No, they... Yeah, forget charity. This, I'm about to win this one. I get my ball. I got my nice little cool shoes.
Yeah.
And eight.
Dude.
They bro. Line it up.
Yeah. Like, yeah. come yeah. on. They're good. Me, I'm just doing it to have a good time.
That's all that counts.
They're trying to win. I know I'm not good at it, so yeah. I don't take it seriously.
Yeah.
So I'm not hurting myself because I have no standard or I have no – I expect nothing. You know, give me three or four pins and I'm good.
That's all you
but
need.
But we really want to just, you know, raise awareness about what we're doing in the community, you know, with the Cornerstone Foundation.
Good.
Last year we raised – or excuse me. Last year we gave out over $200,000 in grants to families in the greater Chicago area. And these grants go for various things. And, you know, living in the hospital for 4 months, you see a lot. You yeah. learn a lot. You know a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, having that experience and seeing it up close and firsthand, I know what these families have gone through.
Sure.
I get it. So, yeah. you know, just trying to, you know, help them out and give them a leg up.
So good of you to do.
Yeah.
That really is good of you to do. Let's talk about one of your former teams, the Chicago Bears. Mm-hmm. They've had an interesting offseason,
yes.
especially at the quarterback position. As you hear all this, what goes through your mind? What are you thinking about for the future of the Bears?
I'm hoping that Glennon and Trubisky, mm-hmm. I think that's how I'm going to start saying his name, Trubisky, I want to see them duke it out. Not on the, you know, not physically fighting, but competition.
Yeah.
You know, I think competition is good, and it'll help them. It'll help Trubisky. Trubisky or Binsky? Bisky?
Trubisky, right?
Yeah, Trubisky. I think it'll help him out. I think it'll help Glennon out. You know, when the thing that I noticed about was, like, Jay Cutler never had any competition. Like,
right.
the spot was just given to him.
Right.
You know, and, you know, whenever you have a bad game or a bad season or whatever, you know, like, there's no one really gunning for your position. You know your job is safe. So it doesn't really make you accountable for your actions on the field. I'm a firm believer in competition. If you know somebody's kind of, you know, gunning for your position, and
makes you stronger.
I think it'll make you stronger. I think it'll make you make better decisions, better throws, or whatever position that you're playing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just every year someone's gunning for your position.
Right.
And that was my approach.
Were you
that
surprised
was
when they drafted him after signing Glennon to such a big contract and making
great.
Such
I mean,
a big
I
deal?
I definitely think it's a good idea because it'll keep him and hold him accountable. And he can, you know, yeah, he probably thought, yeah, this is just my job, it's my spot. But, I mean, they traded up with
right.
the third
yeah.
pick to go number two,
right.
to take him number two overall. So, that to me, that's a bold statement by the GM.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they say it's not competition, but if you read between those lines, it's competition. And I think that's just, it's great. It's great for the sport. It's great for him. It's great for the team. You know, historically, the last couple of years or so,
yeah
you know, we've struggled at the quarterback position. You know, it could have been better. I'm not saying anything that no one hasn't thought.
Right.
But, yeah, I think the quarterback play position, it could have been better over the last couple of years.
What do you think? Like, when they first got Jay Cutler, there were so many high expectations of what he could achieve.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a talented quarterback, but it just never really played out that way. What do you think went wrong? What was missing?
I mean, it could have been a number of things. You know, he was in multiple systems, you know, for four straight years.
Yeah.
I think that's very difficult for a quarterback to do. You know, he
different
probably
offensive
never,
coordinators,
different offensive
learning
coordinators,
a new guy every year.
You know, not really getting comfortable in the position. I can say that because playing in the Chicago defense and then going to Carolina,
yeah
I was more comfortable in Chicago defense. You know, I was only in Carolina a year, and I'm sure maybe year two I would have been more comfortable
yeah.
in their style of defense. But the first year, yeah, you know, you're thinking a little bit more versus just reacting.
Yeah.
And I can attribute maybe some of his play was done with that, or he some of his play was attributed to, you know, having the multiple, coordinators.
Right.
You know, that might have affected them in some type of way.
But ownership would have to know that that would affect the quarterback. Why would ownership keep putting new guys in if they knew that was going to mess with his head a little bit?
Well, I wouldn't even necessarily say it's ownership. That's a GM's job.
Yeah.
That's the head coach GM. More or less the GM's job.
That's who makes that move.
You know, that's who makes that move.
Were you surprised when they was hired as a play-by-play guy or an analyst now for Fox?
I was. I didn't know he had that.
Yeah, I think everybody was shocked.
Yeah. It's a hard job, and I'm not saying he can do it. I'm not saying he can't do it. It's for me, I know I personally couldn't do it, so I'm wishing him nothing but the best.
Well, hopefully they won't bring in different management every 2 or 3 years.
Right. That's what they'll do
to Fox football, so he will get used to the system.
I definitely think he'll be okay. I don't see that happening at Fox.
For fans who would look at him, and I put myself in this list, and he just didn't seem to – he had a cocky attitude. Even when they were losing, it seemed like he just didn't care as much as the fans did. I know that's impossible, but could that be true? Why wasn't there the emotion that we expected from him?
You know, I think Jay's a hard read body language-wise.
You know,
I feel like I'm a tough read, but – and I'm speaking for me and me alone. My opinions are mine and mine alone.
Sure.
I personally felt bad when I would miss an assignment, when I would give up a touchdown or something like
that.
Like I would have to look Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs in the face. And they're just like disgusted with me. And I'm just like, damn, I let my brother down. I let my brothers down. I felt bad. I can't speak for Jay because I don't know how he felt, but maybe, you know, I'm sure he did feel bad. He just expressed it a different way.
Right. Right. On Sundays at noon, now that you're not in the NFL, do you still get like a weird tinge in your body? Like I should be lining up against somebody. It's Sunday and it's 12 o'clock.
You do. You know, being that it was my first year out, it was definitely a little different.
Yeah.
You know, not being in a uniform, and you know, I went to Charlotte, and I went to two of their games.
Yeah.
And I was actually on the sideline with them. I had the coach's uniform and everything. And I was help coaching some of the DBs, and it just, you know, pregame and the national anthem, probably the best part of a game is a national anthem when you have a flyover and you just get whoever's singing, you know, and the home up, right? You just, the chills and everything. You're just like, I'm ready to go. Let's go. Oh! And so I still had all those feelings, you know, except I wasn't, I just wasn't on the field.
Yeah.
You're not as sore as you used to be, right?
I'm definitely not as sore.
That's
got
to be nice to wake up on a Tuesday or Monday and not be sore, right?
My knees, my elbow, my shoulders, my
neck,
my back.
Did your eyelids hurt? I mean, seriously.
Nothing hurts now. I kind of wake up in peace and ease, and I'm just like, yeah.
It's a nice feeling.
It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like most players, if you could get a new body, I'm sure they would pay money to get that new body just to go another year to do it.
Yeah.
It'd be worth it.
Was it difficult for you to decide to retire? Because so often you see, you know, athletes go one or two seasons a little too long.
Yeah.
And so was that difficult? Because you seem to have gone out at the right time.
No. It was difficult from the standpoint of, I don't think I was personally ready. I would say 90% of guys that retire, it's not
they're
on
never
their
ready.
It's not on their terms. You
right.
know, I think your terms are Jerome Bettis, Ray Lewis.
Right.
You know, they won a Super Bowl. That's it. I'm retired.
Right.
It's been real. It's been fun. I'ma holler at y'all like that.
Yeah.
To me, that's going out on your own. That's how I wanted to go out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we'd have won the Super Bowl and in California, Super Bowl 50. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I would have retired, I think it would have felt a lot better, you know, retiring off of being a world champion versus being a world loser.
Yeah, yeah.
I definitely think it would have felt a lot better.
Charles Tillman is here. It's all coming up on Thursday, June the 1st at Kings Bowl in Rosemont. It's Charles Tillman's Celebrity Pro Bowler Tournament. If you want more information, go to charlestillman.org. All the information is there. We'll come back with a segment we tried last time, and Charles, you've agreed to do it again. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Ask Peanut. Anything you want to ask Charles. Now, last time it was mostly romance questions. I don't know why, but there were a lot of people that had questions about love. It doesn't have to be about that. Charles would probably prefer it not be about that. We're at 312-981-7200. Ask Peanut coming up next.
Your IRA?
Yeah, you could ask
can you
about
speak
IRA.
To IRAs?
Sure, absolutely.
Or, you know,
absolutely.
Stocks and
bonds? That's important. Yeah. It's Bill and Jim sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Charles is joining in.
Yeah, we told me today that we're having Peanut on.
Right.
I thought of Charlie Brown, and I'm like, who are you going to have for the peanuts?
It's the other peanut. That's what it is. Charles Tillman is here. Big event coming up on Thursday, June the 1st at Kings Bowl in Rosemont. It's Charles Tillman's Celebrity Pro Bowler Tournament. You can be a part of this by visiting charlestillman.org. All the information is there. It's going to be a fun night.
I'm the black Charlie Brown. The black version.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Do you wear, at the bowling, do you wear like a shirt with the back, like with pins and a ball hitting the pins or something?
No, kind of we wear shirts, you know, that say Kings and okay. You know, it'll have my foundation.
But it's a bowling shirt?
It is a bowling shirt.
Well, that's cool.
Yes.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. The lines are filled. We said it's Ask Peanut. Any question you have, nothing off topic, anything you want goes. So give us a call at 312-981-7200. Charles is standing by to take those calls.
I'll try to answer your question in 30 seconds so we can get to as many as possible.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Thank you for doing that, Charles. Sandy, you're on the line. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
Fine. Charles Tillman is here to answer your questions. What did you have to ask him?
I want to know if he's a Cubs fan or a Sox fan.
So I support all Chicago sports, mm-hmm. but I will be going to the Sox game tonight.
That's perfect.
I went to the Cubs games when they were in the World Series. I went to the White Sox when they were in the World Series. Like I support all Chicago sports.
So nice. Sandy, how about you? Cubs fan or Sox fan?
I'm a Cubs fan. Come on.
I will say this, Miss Sandy. I was born on the South Side.
I was born on the South Side.
Okay. Well, hey, you were a fellow Chicagoan. That's that we agree on one thing.
I support all Illinois teams. I agree.
That's the way to be.
That's the best way to be.
And congrats to the Cubs back in first place as of yesterday. So that's good news. That's where they belong. Very exciting. Thank you, Sandy. Have a good weekend.
You're welcome.
Take care. I've had this argument with people in the past, Charles. I am a fan of both teams as well. Love the White Sox.
And you
love
can
the Cubs.
And you can be.
You can be.
So am I. You can be.
I want to see both teams succeed.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm more of a Cub fan than a Sox fan, but I certainly wasn't rooting against the Sox.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
When they went to the World Series.
Right.
I mean, I have some friends that were diehard Sox fans. They didn't even watch the World Series. I'm like, it's the World Series. Like if you're a baseball fan.
You live in the city. You want. I want all Chicago sport teams to do good.
Remember last year during the World Series, there were bars here in town that would do a deal where if an Indian hit a home run, beers were half off or for free. In Chicago, they were doing that. What's with that?
I don't know.
All right, let's take Chris's call. Chris, Charles Tillman is here. Peanut, ask Peanut anything you want. What do you want to know, Chris?
Hey, Peanut, my question for you is, would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think I'm going to take the horse-sized duck.
You would take one horse-sized duck. Why? Is there a reason?
No, the last one I can remember. It was just like a tricky riddle. So that was the last thing I remembered. Yeah, I'm going to take a horse-sized duck. Kill it, eat it, fight it, smoke it, grill it.
I mean, this guy understands a nickel defense. Yes. I think he can figure that out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm going to get my King David on. I'm going to get my slingshot and fling it right in the middle.
One horse-sized duck, Chris. There's your answer. Have a good weekend.
Controversial answer.
Very, very controversial answer. Yeah,
that might go viral.
I have a serious question. Not that the others weren't, but I have a very serious question for you. With what's been going on in the NFL with concussions and players going in saying, you know, it's a dangerous trade. Playing pro football is a dangerous trade. And the trade-off might be when I'm older, I might not be in the best shape. What do you say to somebody who has a kid who's considering a career in football? They're playing high school or college football. What's your advice to them?
My advice would be to let your child play the game. But I would also explain to that parent or let them know that when you start to feel, you know, lightheaded, woozy, dizzy, whatever, you need to be vigilant and step up and say something. You know, don't look at it as a sign of weakness and or that you're not tough.
Right.
I've been there. I've done that where I'm hurting and I stay in the game because I don't want to let my teammates down.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've made it out okay. You know, I'm by the grace of God, I've made it. But I would really just say, you know, when something occurs or something rises, you have to say something. Go talk to the appropriate person, the head coach or trainer or someone like that, and get it looked after.
At some point, though, I'm sure you've talked with players that came before you or played during your years, and their cognitive skills are a little bit slower. Do you just feel this little tinge of fear saying, boy, that could have been me or could be me in the future? Do you get any of that?
Yeah. I mean, I look at it, but also I've never I mean, to date, on paper, I'll have maybe three or four concussions, you know, in my 13-year career. I don't hit hard. Like, I'm not a banger.
Right.
I punch out the football, you know. For me, I might, you know, have some arthritis in my fingers or something right. like that. But my brain should be intact. So yeah. I don't worry about it as much like certain linebackers or offensive linemen or defensive linemen or running backs. Like, I don't worry about it like them.
What was the sensation of a concussion? Like, what did you see? Did you literally see stars? Did you?
So there's different, different things. I would say one is, you're just lightheaded. You're just dizzy. And then there's another one where it's punch drunk, like the zombie phase, where yeah. I got hit one time and it's just like, damn, that hurt. And I knew what happened. And I fell down. I went limp, but I couldn't control anything. Mentally, I knew it was like, man, it hurts. Damn, my head is ringing and spinning. I can't feel my arms. I can't feel my legs. It's just like a moment of you're just paralyzed for like a second or two. And sure. then you slowly, like, okay, I can move my arms. I can move. Okay, I'm looking around. I'm moving my head. And damn, that hurt. And I remember I was at the bottom of the pile, and the guy that was on top of me was like, get up, he's out. Get up. And my eyes, I couldn't, you know, like, you have no control over any of that. You know, you see guys get knocked out or whatever, and their arms are just like,
right.
It's like they're stiff. They look like a zombie.
Yeah.
It hurt like hell, but I knew everything that happened. Like, I remember everything that happened. I just couldn't.
So you're kind of in your body, but yet you're not.
I just couldn't control it. It's just like, man, that hurts, but I can't move right now. Like, my head is like spinning. Okay, it's going away. Damn, that hurt. And then you sit up and you're like, yeah, I'm good now. Yeah, he hit me in the back of the head. My medulla oblongata. Like, I'm good. Let me stand up. And then you stand up and you kind of like walk sideways like you're drunk. But yeah,
thank you for saying medulla oblongata. Yeah, I didn't think anyone would say that on today's show, but you're our winner. Charles Tillman.
That was the secret word.
That was the duck just came down. Right. I saw the duck come down. The great Charles Tillman, number 33, a big night coming up Thursday, June the 1st at Kings Bowl in Rosemont. It's Charles's Celebrity Pro Bowler Tournament. All the information is at his website. That's charlestillman.org. Charles, great to see you again.
Thanks
I hope you have
me.
A great summer.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate
you
it.
Too.
We'll take a quick break. News is next and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Jim in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff along with Jim Toronto, who's sitting in today for Wendy. Wendy will be back in on Tuesday. We'll all return on Tuesday after the holiday. Our guest is Kurt Wagner, who comes by every Friday to talk television. He is the owner and proprietor of TVShowPatrol.com. Kurt, thanks for being here. How are you?
Yes, I will not be back Tuesday.
You will not be back on Tuesday, but next Friday you'll come back.
Yes.
It'll be business as usual. Last week, we did this a little bit with you, and we did this a little bit with you, Jim. We talked about how there's a show making a return engagement on Showtime, Twin Peaks. I didn't see it, but you guys both saw it. Did it? You didn't see it either?
You didn't see it? He wasn't. I remember I was listening to your segment last week. And
not a fan.
He wasn't even. In fact, you said, "Oh, it's going to be on this Sunday." And he said, "Oh, is that this week?"
Yeah,
it was very laissez-faire about it. And I said, "Well, that's good. At least I have something to talk about."
What did it live up to expectations?
Well, I'll tell you, it was very interesting because I was sitting there with my wife and my cherry pie and the whole thing.
Sure.
And your coffee?
Yeah. Well, I'm not a coffee drinker, so I had the cherry pie. But I'll tell you, it was a very interesting 2 hours. I don't know what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it,
mm-hmm.
which is one reason why I like it,
yeah.
because it's David Lynch and that's what you expect. But I was disappointed in that the first, I would say it was a 2 hour premiere.
Yeah.
The first 45 minutes to almost an hour, there was really not a lot of Twin Peaks. It was mostly other locations,
yeah.
other characters that maybe we'll be tying in later.
Like new characters? Or
yes, completely new characters, completely different new scenarios. And finally, in the last hour, they sort of came back and started to introduce some of the characters and at least give a hint of it. But it certainly was not Twin Peaks heavy. I mean, if you ever watched the original, it never took place anywhere else except Twin Peaks. So for this to have been in Vegas and
strange.
North Dakota and New York, it was just like, well, wait a minute, where I've been waiting 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Twin Peaks? And so I'm waiting to see now what's going to happen this week to see if any of these crazy kind of loose ends get tied up. The one thing I would say is there was a scene with the log lady.
Yeah. Who's no longer with us.
Who's no longer, but she did film the scene. And so I would have just thought, you know, if you want to be David Lynch, who is always a contrarian.
Yeah.
He's always going to not give you what you expect. So I wasn't surprised by this, although it felt more like a David Lynch movie than it was Twin Peaks. But there was this scene where she called Twin Peaks. You know, she called the sheriff at the time, the deputy, to tell him some information from her log. And I'm like, you know, you could have gone off on these tangents, but give the fans who've been waiting 25 years, started off with a nice warm fuzzy.
Something familiar.
Have the log lady give her little phone call, and then you could have gone off.
Right.
And so that was my only disappointment, is that it seemed like he was trying to be weird for the sake of,
right,
you know, being weird.
Kurt, here's my question. Anytime they take a show, that, like Twin Peaks was always an hour-long drama, but mm-hmm. I've seen this also with half-hour sitcoms. They'll do an episode that's twice as long, a one-hour sitcom or a two-hour drama. That's too long, isn't it? When you're used to a format of a certain show, it almost has to stay in that format for it to work, don't you think?
Well, it depends, I guess. A lot of times they do the two-hour premieres or the longer premieres just because it's to make it special, to make the premiere special. But that's interesting that there wasn't a lot of I mean, the stuff I read after that aired was that everybody generally liked it, like all the fans generally liked it.
Well, I think the fans are going to like. I mean, the fans are so hungry for it. But at least, like I said, the last hour, you said, okay, there's something here. There's some red meat here.
But
now
they're
to grab
selling. If you're a fan of that show, particular, you like strange. You want it to be peculiar, right, don't you?
Yeah, and I would expect David Lynch to be contrarian.
Right.
You know, he's been 25 years, and instead of giving you exactly what you expect, he throws your curveball.
Well, and all those things will probably come in.
Yeah, and then sure they will.
In some
bizarre
way.
And sometimes they won't, though.
But back to the one downside of those blown out premieres is that, you know, they build them up themselves, the networks or whoever. And then, you know, once you've got something so built up like that, it can only, you know, generally disappoint. Because everybody's imaginations...
You make it better than
further.
It is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, this is going to be so great.
It's so strange, though, because now our culture is so accustomed to binge watching a show because we have the ability to watch three or four or five or six episodes at a clip. But for some reason, I don't know what it is. Anytime I'm looking forward to a show and they do a doubly as long episode, it almost always disappoints me for some reason. I don't know why.
Like maybe they just have, probably filler.
Stretched they've stretched it out just a little deeper than they need.
And sometimes, you know, the networks ask for it, and so the producers just have to do that. You know, they're like, well, this is what we had planned.
Well, based on what I was seeing, the coming attractions for this week on Twin Peaks, I think they're showing episode 3 and 4.
Oh, really?
So once again.
I think they are.
It's going to be another two-hour thing.
Right. Yeah. I think they are, and then it goes to 1 hour.
Yeah, but I mean, so that's like in 2 weeks
in a row.
But
3 and 4 might be standalones.
As opposed to one.
Just put together.
Well, maybe.
But, you know, you were talking about the binging thing. A lot of networks now are experimenting with putting an entire season on their website.
Oh, all at
for
once?
For people to binge.
Yeah.
Or Sci-Fi just did this with 12 Monkeys, the new season of 12 Monkeys. They did the entire season in 2 days, I think.
Really?
Yeah, and so you could watch it that way, but then I think they go back and we'll show it.
Is that proven to be a good...
Freeform has done it with several... Well, not several, but a handful of shows.
TBS did that with Angie Tribeca. Yeah. You know, the thing.
Yeah. It seems to have worked for those, but I don't know if it's. I haven't read anything about how it's sustained than when they ended up showing it.
Yeah, that's what I wonder. If you do that, then you go back and watch them weekly again?
I guess so, yeah. In England, they do a thing. I don't know if they still do. They did when I was there. If a show is over the time limit, like here our shows are 30 minutes or 60 minutes, if a show goes 35 or 36 minutes, that's what happens.
They just run it. Don't you love it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't
happen. They also have the shorter seasons, which I kind of prefer.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Kurt Wagner's here of TVShowPatrol.com. If you have a question or a comment for Kurt or Jim or myself, 312-981-7200.
You got three geeky TV people in the studio right now.
Right.
I mean, this is pretty scary. The geek factor, we are over the limit.
Easily. All right. More show coming your way next. It's Bill and Jim along with Kurt Wagner on WGN. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. We talk television with Kurt each week at this time. We're easy to reach at 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. There's a new wave of UFO dramas, and most notably, Blue Book. What do we need to know about Blue Book, Kurt?
The History just announced that they gave a 10-episode straight-to-series order for this drama, and it comes from Robert Zemeckis, who is the famous producer-director of
Back to the Future and Roger Rabbit.
Rabbit.
Yeah, yep. Chicagoan.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's from here. Yeah. And there's a name involved with this that I've not heard in a long, long time.
Oh, who's that?
Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Oh, have you heard that name?
Yeah. They used to do a whole bunch of films like In Search of Historic Jesus. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek's name was always attached to these projects.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to get too Twin Peaky geeky on you.
Yeah.
But in the original Twin Peaks, the first one, there's a mention of Project Blue Book.
Oh, there is?
About UFOs. Wow. I never knew that was a real thing.
Yeah, and that's what this is. It's supposed to be true stories, and it follows... Somebody will play Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Who can they get for that? Robert Redford?
It would have to be Redford. Yeah.
And each episode will draw from actual files that were part of the Project Blue Book program, which was a searching for UFOs thing.
So this has kind of an X-Files feel to it.
It does. It sounds
right?
that way, doesn't
yeah,
it? Yeah,
very much
and,
so.
And it's based on fact, and it's set in the 50s and 60s, which was when Project Blue
even
Book
better.
Happened. So.
Do you remember a show prior to X-Files called Project UFO that NBC had for a year?
I remember that.
It had no personality at all. It was like Dragnet. You know the real dry style that Dragnet had? But these guys were out chasing potential UFOs.
And it was a drama,
yeah,
drama thing.
Yeah, it came and went in about a year. But then X-Files happened a year or two later, and everybody went, oh, that's the way you do it.
Yeah.
You do it like that. Now it makes sense. We talked about this a little bit last week, but more details keep emerging. And that's the new version of Roseanne. I saw Laurie Metcalf on last night on one of the talk shows talking about how excited she is to be back with everybody and how it came together in a strange way. John Goodman was on a talk show, and they said to John Goodman, if Roseanne came back, would you be interested? And he goes, yeah, I'd love to do that. And one of the people watching was Sarah Gilbert, who used to be one of the daughters. And she goes, wow, let's try for that. Let's see if we can make it happen.
I'd love to do it.
2 months later, it's happening.
I'd do it if Roseanne called me. Sure.
Wow. That's impressive.
How's that for a John Goodman?
Very good John Goodman.
That is very good, yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be a reality.
You're excused, Mr. President.
Fairly soon, right?
Yeah.
We're going to see it next season.
Yeah. It's on their schedule. It's on their schedule probably mid-season.
Now, here's my question. I love television. We all love television in this room. But are we so devoid of original ideas?
To keep going back to the well?
Will and Grace.
Yeah.
Roseanne.
Right.
They're talking. I mean, they, you know, all you hear about, you know, remember when Full House was coming back? There's 6 months of hype. And then when the shows come on, they're terrible.
Yeah.
But everybody forgets that.
Although Full House was terrible when it was first on.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it was. But, yeah. And it's no different now.
Right.
But. It's been a huge thing on Netflix.
Yeah, right.
Oh, certainly. I mean, it just seems like I've always loved to see the pictures, but after the first 5 minutes, when we say, oh, that person looks good, or that person looks bad, then it's up to the show, and the shows really disappoint.
Right. They always say it's going to be a limited series, the return, you know, like the Will and Grace is right now, 12 episodes, I think, limited series. But then if it does really well... Then you know it's the money
because
right?
Arrested Development's coming back,
right?
Yeah.
Another season.
You know, it's and I think part of it has to do with when your audience ages,
right?
You know, it's the nostalgia factor. You
sure.
know, they think, okay, older folks watch more TV.
All right,
right.
So let's give them something they're familiar with.
But why
with.
Is it always, to your point about Full House? Why is it always these cheesy shows that come back?
Well, Roseanne was really good.
Oh, that was a great show. Right. Don't get me wrong.
So, but. And Will and Grace was really good. So, and you, I'm sure you saw this, Kurt. They did like a 12-minute version of Will and Grace last year. They brought all the four main characters back, and I think the maid was on as well for a little bit. So just to kind of kindle it and say, look, we could potentially still do this. We still have the same timing. Yeah. And it was a really fun 12 minutes.
Well, didn't they do that for that James Burroughs tribute or something?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's where they said, hey,
yeah, let's try this.
This is fun.
There was a quote from Jennifer Aniston, and she said, if the friends themselves joked that if they would ever do a new version of Friends, it would just be four people sitting in a place looking at their phones.
Right, right. Because Central Perk was based on the fact this was pre-cell phone. People would talk to each other. Now nobody would talk to each other. That's really sad but true. We just found out yesterday that two leads of television shows have decided to leave their respective shows. One of them is from Chicago PD, right?
Yeah, Sophia Bush.
She's leaving.
And I, you know, I the season finale, her character, something happened with her character that... made me think, oh, is she leaving? But they didn't announce it till yesterday, and or it didn't come out until
is
yesterday.
Is she giving a reason why she's leaving after she's been with the show?
Four years? Yeah, since it started. No, there was no reason given, and there's no... I mean, it's...
And they canceled Chicago Justice, right?
Justice was canceled, and Matt Olmsted, who was the showrunner for PD, left in March. And I think, you know, I feel it's just moving on to other things. You know, after a while, you just get done. You're done with that character or whatever, but...
The other one's TJ Miller, who is leaving Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Which is huge. Yeah. He's great on that show.
Yeah. He won't be back for the season five.
I'm still waiting for Chicago Streets and Sand.
Right? Wouldn't that be a good show?
Oh, in the winter?
That was minor. Graffiti Busters.
What's that?
Although Graffiti Busters is part of Streets and Sand. So
oh, really?
That could be one of the things.
Special unit. Yeah. It'd be a special unit. And then really quickly, I don't want to leave this out. The Michael Jackson show, that's Searching for Neverland, that starts on Monday, right? That's right. A 7 o'clock start on
Monday?
It is
just a movie, I think.
Oh, it's a one-time thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And do we know who's playing Michael Jackson in this?
Some British. Navi, the world's number one Michael Jackson tribute artist.
I saw this on Access Hollywood. I saw them filming it on Access Hollywood.
Really?
It really looks entertaining.
It doesn't look great, but...
What a surprise.
Yeah. Remember they were going to do a TV movie with Joseph Fiennes playing Michael Jackson?
Yeah, he's a white guy.
And they pulled the plug on that.
Yeah, they pulled the plug fast.
That's too bad. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Kurt, great to see you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday.
You haven't said anything about Kurt's...
His sweatshirt of many colors?
Yeah.
Now, Kurt, for people who can't see because they're not in the room, you found a sweatshirt that has every color of the rainbow in it.
Well, it is.
Can I plug this?
Yeah, sure.
When we go to San Diego Comic-Con every year, there's all the press interviews are in this hotel, and at the bottom of this hotel is this place called Sweet Things Frozen Yogurt.
Yeah.
And we just go in there and hang out and get food, and we can use the Wi-Fi and everything. And they're the nicest folks.
Yeah.
And they actually have Chicago ties. And so...
Do they have a store here?
Amory and I are on their wall. A picture of us is on their wall.
On the wall of fame.
Yeah. Their wall of
fame. Well, it's a tie-dye.
They gave these as gifts to us.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. But they don't have a restaurant here.
No, there's nothing here.
They should open one up.
But if you're ever in San Diego...
Well, what's the name of it?
Sweet Things Frozen
Sweet Things
Yogurt.
In San Diego.
It's the 50th... anniversary of the Summer of Love. So.
Yes, it is. So what better way to celebrate?
All the way, yeah.
Thanks, Kurt. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Jim in for Wendy and WGN. All right. Bob, thank you so much. It's Bill Leff. It's Jim Toronto, Elton Jim sitting in for Wendy. Are you
I'm already uncomfortable.
Are you uncomfortable? I haven't told you the story yet.
I'm still uncomfortable.
Discomfort is the new comfort.
Bob, I don't know what's going on in the WGN newsroom, but I want you to quiet everybody and gather them around because I'm about to share with you.
So many of us up here today.
I'm about to share with you what I said is, and I stand by this, one of the most uncomfortable stories of all time.
The most uncomfortable.
One of them.
Of every story out there.
One of them.
This.
Is
the most uncomfortable.
It's one of the most uncomfortable. I would have to say
you're wrong.
In the top 15 uncomfortable stories. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to share the story with you, and I want you to guess before I do. Or no, don't even guess. You tell me where this story starts to go south.
All right?
And I'm going to warn you, have your hand on the buzzer, because it happens very, very quickly. This is out of Huffington Post this morning. A Texas middle school principal. No, not yet. Okay. You're close. Sorry. You're very close.
You said Texas and you said South.
Middle school. You had the middle school.
You said when it goes south. Texas is as south as you can get.
No, you're being too literal. Oh, I understand. Okay. I know what you're going for. But no, it gets even crazier.
Okay.
A Texas middle school principal plans to launch an investigation after a seventh grade student was named the most likely to become a terrorist. Yes, absolutely right, Jim. You're our winner today. Congratulations.
We're going to flip over all the cards.
All the cards. Arlene Francis? They're launching an investigation after a seventh grade student was named, and I quote, the most likely to become a terrorist in a mock award ceremony. I was shocked, said Elizabeth Villanueva, a 13-year-old student at Anthony Aguirre Junior High in Houston. The teacher said, most likely to become a terrorist, and then she said my name. And then she gave me this.
Don't.
Holding up the award.
Oh, I thought they gave them a vest.
No, you don't get a vest for this. No, they don't hand out vests for this.
With a detonator.
No, they don't. No? Why would they do that?
Okay.
That would be wrong.
Wow.
The whole thing's wrong.
Well, this is
even
that
more
would
wrong.
Be wrong?
Even
you mean
more
the contest
wrong.
Isn't wrong? You're finding out the little parts that are wrong now? Right.
I'm dissecting it to the nth degree.
Wow.
All right. So as we all know, a lot of grade schools and high schools do this. I don't remember. Well, I guess to some extent they might do it in college, but this is the thing you see.
You get the awards right. for best this and best that.
Did you win any when you were in school? Were you named the most likely to or the least likely to something? What was yours?
I got most, here's a surprise.
Yeah.
In eighth grade.
Most talkative?
Most talkative.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by that. Bob, what
Jim is a pleasure to have in class. He just talks too much.
He talks quite a bit, and he gets an award happen. For this. Bob, did you win one? Were you named best anything in grade school or high school?
Not that I remember.
Harmonica player, right?
I think I was playing at that time, and I probably was the best, but I probably wasn't good enough to warrant.
They didn't give you a certificate for that, though?
No, they didn't. It scarred me ever since.
I got class clown, which I was happy to win it, but I thought it should have been most humorous because that sounds like it's got more.
Yeah, you weren't eating your boogers.
No, I wasn't a clown.
The class clown goes for the easy laugh.
Best wit or
right.
most humorous.
I would have respected that more. Right.
But now the other one was kind of a controversial one. You tell me if you like this one or not. Best liar. That's upsetting, isn't
best
it?
Best liar.
Yeah, and it was explained to me that this was complimentary because they said. This was a quote from one of the kids. You could sell ice cubes to an Eskimo. I don't know when that would come up.
Wow.
That's never
a progressive
went.
School you went to.
Right. You could be a...
Very PC of them.
Right. I'm not sure why that was the... Like, I'd
to
feel
me,
better
that
after
that,
hearing
that. Comment
that.
Was more uncomfortable than your story.
I'm sure at some point Eskimos did need to purchase ice cubes.
Can we say Eskimo?
Why would I be the one who they'd send out to Alaska to sell? I don't understand the whole process.
No,
I don't get it.
You don't even know where a good igloo is.
I don't even know. If somebody said to me, here's $1,000, show me an igloo, I'd lose the $1,000.
Do you have some blubber in your pockets that you're trying to pawn off
That part I do have.
Okay,
I always
keep
a little bit of blubber in my pocket. Elizabeth Villanueva, again, named most likely to become a terrorist.
And why? Do we know the criteria?
Well, I'll get into that a little bit. Elizabeth received the award in an advanced learning program that's supposed to help kids prepare for college. Well, that explains it, Jim. The teacher, who was not named, I'm sure he or she was named, just not for the purpose of the story, told the students that the award was supposed to be funny, but Elizabeth was not laughing. Imagine that. You've just been named most likely to become a terrorist and you don't find it funny.
What a prude.
It was not a joke, Elizabeth was quoted as saying. I do not feel comfortable with this, shockingly.
And then she said, death to America.
Right. She waited 3 seconds and then said that. And she made that noise.
Right.
Principal Eric Lathan released an apology on Twitter for what he called insensitive and offensive awards. Now, that's not fair because awards is plural and we'd have to hear the other awards to make that determination, wouldn't we? Saying that they were distributed after the school's real awards ceremony had concluded. So to be clear on this, this was not part of the school's real awards, but an auxiliary
this
award.
This was the
program.
Wacky,
right.
You know, offline party.
Yes.
I mean, so there's a school.
Yes.
There are teachers.
Yes.
There are adults.
Yes.
And this gets through the vetting process.
Right. Somehow. Well, I don't know what kind of a vetting process there was. I'm positive the teacher thought it would be funny. It didn't end up being funny.
In today's world.
That's the problem.
I am the
most. You're coming off of an event that just happened in Manchester that's horrendous. So don't you say, even if you think it's funny, don't you go, wow, the timing on this is really bad.
I am the most inappropriate person.
Yes.
On Earth.
Yes.
And even I
would have said,
whoa, there, I would have found a governor on
we
that.
Can't
said,
do this.
We can't do that.
Yes.
At least right now. Yeah, I mean.
And governors, as you know, Jim, are busy punching reporters right now. So good luck finding a governor.
Body slamming, let's be honest.
Do you have any Eskimo relatives that need ice cubes? Because I have a bunch in my car.
Well, I'm certainly if I did, I would not bring them around you.
No.
Because they would be buying ice cubes.
Right. Elizabeth's mother, Mrs. Villanueva, told local CBS station KHOU that the principal apologized in person as well, nice of him to do, but said that she wants the teacher to face discipline.
This does take away from that parenting philosophy that everybody gets a trophy. You should be proud of this, right? I mean, at least your daughter won
something. She won something. She got an award.
You know,
you're not giving them to everybody.
She might not know the long division.
Right. But
my goodness, can she spot a landmark and say that's not going to be there tomorrow?
Ina Hernandez said get fired or at least something? That's the answer she wants from this teacher, who, again, was not named in the story. It doesn't look at all, it doesn't look good at all, especially coming from a teacher who is a grown-up woman, Hernandez said.
Hopefully.
It doesn't look, no, hopefully he's right.
Yeah, I mean, who else would be teaching?
It doesn't look good because everything that's going on right now, said Ina Hernandez, who does not want to be known as the mother of the girl most likely to become a terrorist.
Wow. But although, once again, we have to at least admit that this is a progress because it wasn't a boy.
Right.
It was a woman. Female empowerment.
Right.
It's good to see the gals getting into terrorism.
Look at you, Mr. Silver Lining.
You know, people accuse me of being cynical.
No, not this time
being
around.
Being devil's advocate. I'm saying, go, you go, girl.
Yeah. You also won a special award, Jim, but I can't say what it is.
I can only imagine.
But you also won one. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more to share with you. Stick around. It's Bill and Jim in for Wendy on WGN. The beauty of that is, I've never heard anyone do a John Goodman impression ever, and I always like hearing people who have never been done before.
And you know what? I'll be honest with you. I have never done that before.
Is that right? That sounds just like John Goodman.
I just felt...
You pulled it off.
I have done that phrase because there's a great episode of West Wing.
Yeah.
Where he plays the Speaker of the House who becomes president.
Oh, right.
Because there's no vice president.
Yeah.
They use the 25th Amendment.
Yeah.
And so he becomes, and so they're in the Oval Office, and so John Goodman is there, and he's going to become president, and Martin Sheen is still president, but they're going to now sign the papers, so Martin Sheen is not president for this certain period of time.
Yeah.
And so Martin Sheen signs the paper, and then he's still like giving orders to his staff.
Right.
And John Goodman just looks at him and goes, "You're relieved, Mr. President." And then Martin Sheen just looks at him and realizes, "Yeah, I'm not president anymore."
Yeah.
All right, everybody, now let's get going. And so I have done that line. I've never done this much
You've
John
never
Goodman.
Done a full
and,
read.
And did you notice how I threw in a little Roseanne?
I did notice that.
And a little the dude abides in
that
there.
That was stunning. That was very nice.
Yeah, I got a new voice here now, so.
Get some Revenge of the Nerds in. And
oh, yeah, just a tad Revenge
All
of the Nerds.
All the bases covered.
Or Talking Stories.
Babe Ruth.
I actually met him when he made Babe Ruth in Really
They shot that here.
Yeah, I interviewed him. Yeah, it was cool.
Was he a nice man? I hope he was.
I was in a bad place at that time, Bill.
Oh no.
Yeah, I was.
Hate to hear that.
Yeah, I heard him give an interview. He was very ornery. I was sitting next to him in the dugout at Wrigley Field while they were filming that, and he was doing a scene where he had to strike out.
Uh huh.
And it was like 90 degrees, and he was not in a good mood, and I think he knew that I was. In the media, I was writing for a magazine, and I was interviewing him, and he knew me. Like, didn't know me, but he knew I was a reporter or whatever. And he wasn't...
Didn't go well.
He didn't say three words to me when he didn't have to.
You know what's funny is my John Goodman story also has to do with how hot it was. My wife is an actress, and she got cast in a Missouri tourism commercial. So what happened was she and another guy and John Goodman spent an entire 12-hour day all over different parts of Missouri.
I'm sure he doesn't sweat much.
I'm telling you, my wife's story is that he just perspired and perspired and perspired, and they had to bring suitcases of clothes for him to change into because in every take.
Well, don't forget now. So it was like 90 degrees that day,
yeah.
And he was wearing the wool Yankees. You know, so he was, I don't blame him for being mad because it was hot and he was dripping.
But now he's one of those guys, because I always feel for actors who decide at some point, I got for my own health reasons, I've got to drop some weight. John Goodman has lost a ton of weight. He's still working a lot, but it does like it's jarring a little bit to see him now because there's much less of him than there was.
About 6 months or so, my wife and I went to New York and we saw him on Broadway in the play The Front Page with Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
And it was odd. Because, you know, there was a huge cast. John Slattery from Mad Men.
Wow.
Yeah, John Slattery. It was Nathan Lane.
Wow.
A lot of people in it. And John Goodman. And so John Goodman came in about, you know, halfway through Act One. And it was, he's not 145 pounds.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. He's still a big guy, but he's certainly not as big as he used to be. But it was a little bit like, oh, wait a minute. That's John. You know, the sad part is for the first 10 minutes, you're looking at how skinny John Goodman is, and you're not watching the show.
I've seen him in two movies since he's lost the weight,
yeah.
And it's the same thing. Is you're pulled out of the story for a little bit, going, "Why? Wow, I hope he's all right."
Yeah, you know. Apparently, I heard him on an interview. He just he just decided that, you know,
time to get healthy.
For health and his age, that he just needed to
good.
To stop. And basically, the way he made it sound is he stopped eating. He only eats now when he's hungry.
Oh, we all should do
and
that.
He was an alcoholic, and so he stopped drinking. So
good. He'll live a lot longer and work.
Yeah, I hope to. I'm looking forward to the Roseanne.
Very good. I hope so.
Bill, I don't know. You know you've unleashed something here.
Will you do the whole bonus hour as John Goodman?
I just may do that.
That'll be fine. Jim and I are headed toward the stream in just a little bit. You can go
that's
to,
right. This is over already?
Well, we'll go upstairs. We'll do another bonus hour upstairs.
Why did this guy go?
This guy
went really fast today.
Yes, it did. Steve Bertrand's going to come in a little bit. We'll find out what he has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hiss.
Are you hissing, Steve?
I'm hissing, Steve.
Oh, Jim. Decorum. What's wrong with you? He's our friend. He's our radio friend.
All right,
so you have two options coming up in a little bit. You can hear Jim and I on the stream, or you can also stay right where you are and listen to Steve Bertrand here on regular WGN radio. Either way, it's going to be good. Stick around. More next. Bill and Jim on WGN.